and welcome to minute 82 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Todd Lugenow of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Thanks, Rob. I'm coming to you live from Bumville today.
I'm glad. We're going to talk about Bumville. So it's a good thing you're already there.
Yeah.
You made it there before we got there, which is good. Makes a lot of sense. So, minute 82 begins with Michelson / Mendelsohn responding and ends with Miller explaining the Grand Allied Plan. So, we ended things yesterday with Miller trying to get a little bit of information out of this misnamed character played by Ryan Hurst. You know, is he Michelson? Is he Mendelsohn? Who cares? He's both.
Yeah.
it's because it's Ryan Hurst, so that's okay. And so now he's continuing to try to get the information, and we had Upham write on this little pad all these little questions. And the question was, do you know where he is? And this minute opens up with Michelson. We're just going to call him Michelson for now. With Michelson screaming, yeah. We missed our drop zone by about 20 miles. Ended up way over by Bumville or some damn place. Him, me, and a couple of other guys were coming here to the rally point. Ran into our colonel, who was gathering up men to go to Rommel. And Miller goes, Rommel? He goes, to babysit a bridge. That's the last I've seen of him, sir. Great. Thank you. Now, part of some of the stuff that he says here is a little strange also. Okay, we know that Michelson and Ryan are not in the same company. Okay, they're in different companies. Okay, but also anyone who knows anything about the history of D-Day, you know, whether you've seen Band of Brothers, have you seen Band of Brothers?
I haven't seen Band of Brothers, but I have seen, of course, The Longest Day, and so you know, him talking about being off target of their drop zone and such, you know, that was bringing back images of The Longest Day for me.
Okay, that's another example, right? The Longest Day also shows it. You know, as I've said many times, The Longest Day is a 3-hour movie that is just way too short.
I enjoy The Longest Day as well. Oh, yep.
It's great. But, so, I mean, the idea is that if these guys are in different companies, okay, it means that they were on completely different planes. And the fact that randomly the two of them were to meet up, you know, these two best friends who know each other's middle names, you know, are able to, you know, somewhere, you know, near Bumville. And, I mean, it's good, you know, maybe they had cell phones back then and they would say, hey, Jimmy, where are you? And he goes, hey, I'm near Bumville. He goes, hey, I'm also near Bumville. Let's get together and try to get back to the rally point. I don't know.
Carrier pigeons were sending those messages back and forth. You know, they write it all out on their little pads with their little golf pencils, tie it to their legs, and they talk back and forth that way.
It could be, you know. So it's just very interesting. Again, it's a nitpick, but isn't that why we do minute by minute? To nitpick things, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't make any sense that the two of them would have been together. You know, it's not like one of them bribed, you know, one of their commanders, saying, hey, put us on the same plane, but that wouldn't have helped either because everyone was scattered all over the place. So it's you know, it's definitely a very random thing here.
Now, I mean, you know, let's face it, you know, Mendelsohn or Michelson or whatever you want to call him, he's a plot exposition guy, you know, he's what's his rank? He's Sergeant Plot Exposition, whatever his rank is.
That's true. He doesn't even have any stripes. So you don't even know if he's, you know, even Riven has one stripe showing he's a private. Here, we don't even know what Madison is.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, so he, yes, I agree, he's a plot exposition guy, but it still works well the way that they do it, you know. Yeah. So, you know, he talks about Bumville, and Bumville is not a real place, obviously. It's probably somewhere in the middle of Oz.
Well, but there is a place with a similar name, and so I wondered if it was like him mispronouncing.
Well, the movie does mention a number of different places. There's Newville, and there's which place are you talking about?
Well, when I just did a kind of a general search, and you know, I never go too deep because I'm always like, well, Rob's going to dig deep here. But when I typed in Bumville in France, it's basically said, well, there's no Bumville, but there's a Brunville, Brunville, which is near Normandy. So I assumed that that's what he was talking about.
Okay, it could be. It's very possible. But then they talk about Ramel. Did you find Ramel anywhere?
Well, Ramel is not a real place from what I have seen here.
Ramel is a completely fictional town.
Yeah.
But maybe Bumville is also a place that's completely fictional.
Well, and when I first heard him say Bumville, it made me laugh because, you know, my first thought was not, is this a real place? I didn't even think about that. My brain went to, you know, he was just making up some name, you know, that was kind of like his own little word that he uses for someplace small in the middle of nowhere, because myself and you know, people in my family, a lot of times if we're talking about some place that is, you know, barely on the map and we're driving across Iowa or Nebraska or whatever, we'll often refer to it as Buttsville, which is not that far off of Bumville. So I kind of thought it was his own version of Buttsville.
I know that the Lebanese don't talk that way normally, so that's a little strange.
Hey, no. You could say butt on TV and the radio. So I get, okay. I, you know, that one I could get away with.
Okay. You guys believe in the George Carlin seven words.
The seven words, we try to not do those in our house.
That's what I'm saying. If it's not part of the seven words, then you're allowed to say it. So that's
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So I actually looked up what Bumville means, and Bumville, according to the Urban Dictionary, is a gathering place for homeless people who
know.
So
I mean, I guess I get where that name is coming from, I guess. Okay, you know,
I mean, when I think of the term bum, I think of Bumstead, you know, growing up on Dagwood Bumstead, the Blondie cartoons. So.
Well, and the movies too. They showed those movies. I don't know if it was the same way where you grew up. You were in Detroit, right? Mm-hmm. So in Chicago, they used to play the Blondie and Dagwood movies on the weekends on Channel 32 because they made like I don't know how many of those movies. There's probably
15 or something.
Yeah, like I mean there's a bunch of them, 15, 20, something like that. But I mean, it was literally the type of thing where, like, every week, Saturday afternoon, there was a different Blondie and Dagwood movie on. And if it wasn't Blondie and Dagwood, it was Ma and Pa Kettle.
Right. It's true. There are 28 Blondie films. Wow.
Wow. Wow.
Unbelievable. Oh, wow. Interesting. Right, so he says that they went to go babysit. So what do you know about the term babysitting?
What do I know about the term babysitting? Nothing other than the fact that, you know, it's something that, you know, most of us had to do at some point in our youth, whether we were babysitting like siblings or cousins or what have you. But I certainly did my fair share of babysitting.
Okay, when do you think it started becoming popular for teenagers to babysit? In what decade?
I guess my brain would always go to the 50s, but that may be just based on watching old TV shows. I don't know.
It goes all the way back to the 20s.
Wow.
And then during the 50s and 60s, it became really important in suburban America because of the fact that you know, people started having more kids at the time, so therefore, you know, they at that point needed it. Now, What do you think the reason that the idea of babysitting came around in the 1920s? What can you connect between the 1920s and the idea of needing babysitters?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think it does it have something to do with the depression or something?
No, the depression is the 30s. So what it was
Oh, depression's 30s. Okay. I'm not sure.
the whole idea of
Well, or move, or is it about like movies came along and so parents wanted to go to the movies for the night?
It had to do with the fact that women got the right to vote. So at that point they started, they had the 19th Amendment, and that at that point they started having changes in the traditional gender roles and things like that, that women started to go out and work.
Huh.
Women in the 1920s became 20% of the workforce, and therefore, it got to the point where they needed someone to watch their kids.
Okay.
So they started needing people to watch their kids, and what best to watch your kids, what's better than watching your kids than to have teenagers come in and do it.
Yeah. I was actually you're talking about babysitting here. I was chatting online the other day about the television series Amazing Stories, which of course was Steven Spielberg was behind that. That was in the mid 80s, and they were asking what are some of your favorite episodes of that show, and one that popped into my mind is one that's called The Sitter, which is got these two obnoxious kids, one of whom is played by a very young Seth Green, that are end up getting a babysitter, I think played by Mabel King, who's like kind of a somewhat into like voodoo-ish type of things, so she's able to make all these weird things happen. So like when she tells the kids, now you need to be careful because there's a monster in the closet type of thing, there really ends up being a monster in the closet type of stuff. So it's kind of a fun one that's kind of funny but also a little bit creepy.
Interesting. Yeah, I do remember that episode. My favorite episode is always going to be the original the bomber episode.
Oh, the one with that Spielberg directed. Yeah. That's a good one. My favorite is the one called Mummy Daddy, which was directed by William Dear, where you have them shooting a mummy movie in the swamp, and the guy playing the mummy gets word that his very pregnant wife is giving birth, and so he runs off still in the mummy costume. And so then all the folks that live in the swamp think that he's this mummy from of local legend that was part of a carnival, and they all start chasing him with the torches and pitchforks and such, and then the guy stumbles upon the actual mummy, and then the real mummy starts chasing him as well. So it's a wild episode.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay, so how much do you think the average the national average babysitting cost is per hour?
Now, oh my gosh.
Now, and again, I have information for if you have one child, two child,
Yeah.
two
Oh
children,
yeah.
or three.
Oh no, this is why we never had babysitters come for our kids. I mean, literally we would wait for those opportunities where like a friend or a relative was over or something like that. Because it was so darn expensive. I mean, I want to say it's at least 20 bucks an hour.
You said your son is 22, so it means you're talking 20 years ago.
I'm
So
talking 20 years ago. Yeah.
how expensive it must have been then
I mean,
compared to
I'm going to
the
say like 20 bucks an hour, but I think that's probably low.
that is low. Yes.
Yeah.
Currently, it is 22.68 $20.68 an hour if you're watching one child, 25.37 if you're watching two, and 27.70 for three.
That's insane.
It's
That's
completely insane.
absolutely insane.
Completely.
That's why, for so many years I never got to go to the movie theater because we had just stayed home because we had kids and it was too expensive to justify going to the movies and going to dinner and then paying for a sitter and all that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah. It's you gotta refinance the house to go out on date night.
Seriously. So okay, when do you think they started using the term babysitter?
Well, you're saying it came to prominence in the 20s. I'll still go with the 50s on that.
1937.
Okay.
When the noun first appeared, calling someone a babysitter. Okay. And when do you think the verb to babysit first began?
To babysit? 1940 something.
Okay, 47, which means
10 years later.
Which means that Michelson is saying that they had to babysit. Doesn't make any sense because they didn't use that
word. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And it says something very interesting here. It says that the American Heritage College Dictionary notes that one normally would expect the agent noun babysitter with its -er suffix to come from the verb. To babysit, as in diver comes from dive, right? Mm-hmm. But in fact, babysitter was first recorded in 1937, 10 years earlier than the first appearance of to babysit, the verb. Thus, the verb was derived from the agent noun rather than the other way around.
Huh.
And it's an example of what's known as back formation. The use of the word sit to refer to a person tending to a child is recorded from the 1800s. The term may have originated from the caretaker sitting on the baby in one room while the parents are entertaining or busy in another. It is also that the term came from the hens sitting on their eggs, thus caring for their chicks.
That one is a lot easier to deal with than the idea of a person actually sitting on the child.
I agree. So at this point, Miller then... starts motioning and says, okay, right, thank you, Reed, and thank you. And then Michelson says, you're welcome, as they show him, that they wrote thank you.
I love that we hear him shout, you're welcome, off in the distance. Yes, they're walking away.
Exactly. And then Miller screams to his men, he goes, assemble on me. And then he starts walking away, and then... this is something I never noticed before doing the research here also. Miller then, he's still holding the bag of dog tags, that we were talking about last week. And he tosses it to DeWitt and says to him, thank you, Lieutenant. Because here he just throws out the term, thank you, Lieutenant. But if you're watching what he does, he's tossing the bag of dog tags back to him.
Oh. Okay, makes sense. I heard him say the line, and it didn't really register to me what was going on there.
Who's the lieutenant? I had to scrub back and forth trying to figure out, okay, who's this lieutenant they're talking to? And then I realized, wait a second, last week, those episodes, he was talking with DeWitt. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so now we have the men, around Miller, and he also sits down where they were playing with the dog tags, this little makeshift table that they
hit.
And then he pulls out a map and goes, Rommel, we're here. There. Rommel is on the Murderit River, right here, just to the southwest of us. Now, I'm just going to ask a quick question here. Do you think the Murderit River is real or not?
I didn't look that one up. I assumed it must be because it's, a little bit more obvious when you're faking something like a river than it is, making up a town.
Yes. So it is. It is correct. And it is a 36.4 kilometer long, which is 22.6 mile river in Normandy, which is connected to the river Douve, D-O-U-V-E. And it actually... touches an area called Boozville, which could be connected to Bumville. I mean, you said you saw Brunville, but here's Boozville.
Yeah. Booze, like booze as in like alcohol booze, type of thing?
It's French spelled, so it's B-E-U-Z-E-V-I-L-L-E.
Okay.
Bouzeville La Bastille. So no, it's just pretty interesting. Now it actually runs parallel to Utah Beach. So
Okay.
that's also a little strange because it means it's far away from where they theoretically should be at this point. The whole thing. And the 82nd Airborne Division were scheduled to do amphibious landings on D-Day, right in that area. And it was known as Mission Boston. That's what they called it when they were. The part of something that happened in the real Murderette is basically what they sort of fictionalize here with the whole way that they do this. So at this point, Miller then decides to continue explaining the whole thing, and he basically goes, Rommel is on the Murderette River right here, just to the south of west of us. And then Mike asks a good question. He goes, "You know anything about the bridge you were talking about, Captain?" He goes, "Yep, the target has always been Cherbourg. We can't push on Paris until we take a deep water port, and Rommel knows that. So he's going to try to get his armor across the Murderette River anywhere he can." And then he gets cut off, telling his little bit of a plan here, which it's again, it goes back to what you were talking about earlier, how Mikkelsen is an expedition laden character, but here they're continuing with the exposition because they're giving us a general information about about the plan here, even though it's a mixture of the real plan and a fake plan, or the real and fictional plan of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because there is no real Rommel, that type of thing.
I do know there's a Cherbourg, because I've heard that before.
That is correct.
I haven't seen the movie, of course, though. I mean, as a movie fan, where that comes to mind is because I know there's a film called The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, which I have not seen. But
Maybe that's a forgotten Filmcast episode that you
well, I don't think so. I think that it's a pretty well-known film. I just haven't seen it. So yeah, I think some people would get mad at me if I called it a forgotten film.
might. Well, what you have to remind me, what's your criteria?
Well, I mean it's I don't have qu really a hard set bunch of criteria. It's kind of more, it's a feeling, but I do look at Letterboxd and kind of see how many people have watched a given movie before I choose to cover it. So I'm not sure how many have logged the Umbrellas of Cherbourg, but I'm sure it's probably quite a
Maybe
lot.
32,000. So I guess that's probably too
Yeah.
many.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. A young woman separated from her lover by war faces a life-altering decision. Okay.
It's a musical. I know that. And I know that our good friend Jay Kluet did not like it.
Okay. That's a reason not to watch it. But then again, he didn't like Stand By Me, so I don't know. I don't.
You know, Jay's a good guy, but sometimes.
He's a great guy. I'm not a fan of foreign films, so I'll go with him on this one. Stay
Okay.
away. I'll stay away from it. I am not going to be doing that one with you on Forgotten Filmcast, which won't be forgotten. So there you go. And so at the very end here, they mentioned Rommel. Now, I'm assuming you know who Rommel was, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I admit I'm not good at remembering every little bit of World War II history, but I've certainly heard the name Rommel many, many times. I mean, of course, again, as a movie fan, your brain always goes to movies. You know, when you hear these names, these historical figures, these historical places, your brain connects them with movies, of course. And so I think probably Patton is the movie that comes to mind when I hear the name Rommel come up, because I think he growls about Rommel a few times in that movie.
I actually just watched that again 2 weeks ago. Patton. I liked it more than I did before. you know, in the past. So, I mean, I liked it in the past, but I got a better appreciation for it this time also. So Rommel's full name, you know what his nickname was, don't you?
Is it the Desert Fox?
It was the Desert Fox. So yes. His full name, he's known as Erwin Rommel, but his full name is Johann Erwin Eugene Rommel. And what's very interesting is that you know, he died during the war. He died 6 months after, or actually even less. He died in October of 1944.
Okay.
Do you have any idea how he died?
I do not know how he died.
He basically was court-martialed. Hitler had him branded and wanted to execute him as a traitor. Because he was part of the assassination, or he knew about the assassination attempt.
Yeah, as you started to say it, it just popped up on my screen because I typed in the name on Google and the words "forced suicide by cyanide poisoning" popped up.
Okay. They give him a choice of you know, do we kill you or do you kill yourself? He decided to do it himself. But it only happened, the Allies only found out that he died 6 months later. You know, after he died. So interesting, the way that the whole thing works. I guess you can call it an honor killing or whatever. I don't know. right. So Rommel was Patton's main adversary, as he was also Monty's main adversary in you know, in Africa. Monty's Montgomery, Bernard Montgomery, who was the main British general of the war. Okay, so that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I don't think so.
Right. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I will say to start with, I think that this one in Saving Private Ryan could crack my five, but you know, because as we talked about last time, it was my first time watching it. You know, hasn't had the chance to marinate, shall we say. So I kind of went with the ones that that came to mind first as ones I love to revisit. So number five, I went to Catch Me If You Can, another Spielberg one there. Number four, Apollo 13. Number three, Splash. Number two, Big. And number one, A League of Their Own.
All right, that is a great list. Thank you very much. I thought Bachelor Party would be on your list.
No. I mean, I love the 80s. I love 1984 movies. Bachelor Party is not a good movie. Not to say I don't like watching Bachelor Party, but it's not a good movie. Splash gets the 1984 representation here. So.
I was joking. I know you well enough that I just assumed that Bachelor Party was far off of your list. Not even close to the top.
But I did, however, recently when I was at the record store browsing the used soundtrack section, I did pick up a copy of the Bachelor Party soundtrack on vinyl because why not? But it's still not a good movie.
Okay, I can see that. I can understand that. It has its fun moments, but that's it.
Yes.
But I'm actually surprised that you don't have any Toy Stories on your list.
Well, yeah, I mean, see, that was tough too because I did think about Toy Stories, but at the same time, I was like, do I really want to do an animated one? I mean, I love those movies, but I don't know. I decided not to do animation. So
that's completely fair. All right,
and I did come really close. I mean, Catch Me If You Can. I could have just as well swapped out That Thing You Do, because I think that movie's a lot of fun too. So
a lot of fun when you get to listen to the same song over and over.
Yes, yes. But at least it's a good, fun song, you know.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, but it gets annoying by the end, even though it's a fun song.
I agree. I think you know, That Thing You Do may set the record for repeating the same song over and over again the most. But I don't mind it too much.
No, I understand. I understand. All right, Todd, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, so the podcast is called The Forgotten Filmcast. You can find that wherever you find your podcasts. I have a blog, which is at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. And you can follow me on X at Forgotten Films. It's films with a Z. And I'll also throw out here, too, I'm on Letterboxd. I love Letterboxd. So if you're on there, follow me. I follow back.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to movearoundminute@movearound.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on Twitter, X. You can actually also find me on Letterboxd, even though I don't update it as much as I probably should. But, you know, I think the last time I updated was 6 months ago, which means I'm like 600 movies behind. I need to figure out a way to do that more efficiently.
I'm religious about it. That's the first place I go after I'm done watching a movie, is I log it on.
Yeah, I do IMDb. That's the thing. I'm an IMDb person from that perspective. But I do recognize the importance of doing it on Letterboxd, because of all the stats they give you and stuff like that. You can say, ooh, I just want to see how many Tom Hanks movies I've seen. It'll give you the list. I'm aware of that. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It just hasn't gotten into my routine, even though it probably should. Oh, well, that's the way it is. All right. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude.